Hey, pussy, are you still there?
I actually admire that you can actually be this fake and like when the TV comes on, how you can just change. You're the scum of the earth.
Don't doubt you, miss. I couldn't do it. The old said I couldn't do it. Look at me now.
All right, and we are back with part two of UFC 300's videos. I'm your host, Joel, along with Evan and Nick. And this video is going to be, we're going to capture the prelims of UFC 300. So if you're tuning in from the early prelim video, we appreciate you following along. If you've only watched this video so far, make sure you check out the early prelim and stay tuned for the main card video. Again, like always, don't forget to subscribe to the channels, like the videos, helps us grow, helps us move. We are cooking right now. We've had fighter interviews out the ass, so shit's growing, boys. We're getting there, but I don't want to waste any time because, again, this is the greatest fight card of the year, without
a doubt.
Of all
time.
Best fight card of all time. So I think we go right into this. To kick off the prelims, boys, we have a prospect in himself, big fan of his, Diego Lopez. Yeah. Fighting Sadiq Youssef to kick off the prelims, kick off that 300. Number 13, Sadiq Youssef versus Diego Lopez.
Yep.
Stylistically, it's a great fight. Diego Lopez is a very, very menace. Solid prospect. He's a hell of a fighter. Sadiq Youssef is also, you know, top 15. So this gets Diego Lopez a rank if he wins. So there's a lot of implications with this fight. Going into this, but yeah, I'll let any of you guys want to talk about it too. I'm very big on Diego Lopez, but I do like Sadiq Youssef, so I'm kind of 50-50 on it, but I'll let you guys talk about what you guys want to talk about too. So
go ahead, Nick, give us your kind of thoughts on it.
Got you guys. I definitely think that Diego Lopez deserves to be ranked, especially after his past couple fights, man. This is the test that he needs. It's not a big jump for him. I don't think it's going to be even a big change of how he fights, how he trains for this. I got him winning this fight. I looked up a lot of information on the other guy as well. I say Diego Lopez just being a straight up savage in this fight. I think he's better skilled in every aspect. And we see this, and then we see him get this dub, and then you see him do some big things in the future, man. I love him in this division.
Yeah, I agree. I agree 100%. Here's what I'll say about Diego Lopez. Diego Lopez made his UFC debut on short notice against Mokhtar Evilov.
Yep, but who's right, top which, eight, right?
Top five.
Top five,
I mean, they're calling.
Yeah, he's fifth.
They're calling for him to fight Ilya for the belt. I mean, he has a legitimate case. He just beat Arnold Allen.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
I'll say about this, though. That was on short notice. That was a decision win for Evilov. It was unanimous, but, like, honestly, Diego Lopez lost that fight, but won the fans because he took that fight on day's notice, like crazy short notice, went against one of the most dangerous fighters in the featherweight division and not only held his own, but threatened. Like, I mean, he ripped off two wins since then.
First round wins at that.
Yeah. Two first round wins. Coming against Sadiq Youssef, definitely going to be his toughest fight in the UFC to date. But I agree with Nick. I think he's better everywhere. I think he has his way. I honestly do. I think he dominates this fight.
Oh, yes.
I think he ends up getting a submission victory. His Brazilian jiu-jitsu is world class.
It's good, dude.
It is. Yeah. I mean, it doesn't get any better than Diego Lopez as far as jiu-jitsu goes in the featherweight division. I think he has his way with Youssef. He's got size on him, you know, 5'11". A little bit of a 5'11". He's a pretty big featherweight. A slight reach advantage, slight leg reach advantage. I love this fight, you know, for a top 15. I think Diego Lopez takes it convincingly, man. I do.
And I think if he does take it convincingly, it's going to set him up for something even bigger his next fight. I think he's going to get a quick jump. You know, if he wins this one, you know, in the first round in a crazy fashion, I think from there the UFC goes, okay, we have a superstar here. We have another guy in this featherweight division who can make a name for himself. Let's push him right into that top 10. Let's get him a top 10 fight. Let's give him Yair Rodriguez. Let's give him Movsar rematch. Let's give him.
Yeah, I'd like to see that Movsar Evilov rematch.
Yeah, let's give him, you know, because, you know, I think, to be honest, it like a win in the top between 10 and 15 is it's a perfect setup because Yair is obviously coming off two losses.
Yeah,
you know, he just lost to Brian Ortega. So the next person who fights from the 15 to 10 ring should fight Yair, in my opinion. So, and then we also have Calvin Kattar fighting Aljo. So, you know, you did big things there too later on. Brian Ortega, big win. So that, I mean, this featherweight division might not be getting talked about like it should, with a lot of this top 10 coming up
recently.
So, you know, there's a lot going on here, but I also agree with you fellas. I'm going to join the band and, I'm going to go with Diego Lopez by finish.
Two in a row, three for three. We all agree. I love it.
Oh yeah.
And then the next one. Now, as Murky said earlier, this is not different. One you want to. Yeah, this is different.
This is different.
This is different.
Hold on, brother. Hold on, brother.
Hold on, brother.
This make women's MMA great again.
Special teams, special plays, different women.
Yeah. Special teams, special plays, special players. Different. Hold on, brother.
This one's a little different, boys. We have the Kayla Harrison making her UFC debut against a legend, the legend, Holly Holmes, who is still top five ranked women's bantamweight after her long career, which
not saying so much. That's literally the worst division in combat sports, but it's fine.
But there's a lot of implications in this fight. And one big thing that's being talked about a lot is the fact that can Kayla Harrison cut that weight, make that bantamweight. You know, if she does, will she be able to, you know, go
be
out
the
there
same.
Be the same and beat someone who is, you know, yeah, Holly Holmes may have a little age to her, but let's not forget she's one of the most technical strikers in that bantamweight division of all time. So it's definitely a big fight for Holly Holmes. If she beats her, I mean, boys, if Holly Holmes beats Kayla Harrison, this is big for that division.
Well, it's kind of like, you know, Kayla Harrison's coming from PFL or Bellator. Right.
PFL.
I mean, it just goes to show like it's another argument that would go to show you just how far ahead the UFC is talent wise above these other, you know, tier one promotions. I mean, it's not even close. But Kayla Harrison's an Olympic gold medalist. I mean,
but let's not note the last Olympic judo gold medalist to fight Holly Holmes ended up face planted.
She wasn't a gold. She wasn't even a gold medalist. She was a medalist, not a gold medalist.
Was she not? Ronda Rousey?
Bronze or something.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I thought she was a judo gold. But anyways, let's not forget the last judo Olympian. We'll just call it Olympian.
Yep.
To fight Holly Holmes. Ended up face planted on the canvas. So, again, big fight for Kayla Harrison. Big fight for Holly Holmes. I'll start my pick. I think Kayla Harrison gets it done. Her power is just unique. If she's able to even get a clinch on Holly Holmes, I think she gets her down, takes her down, and is able to, you know, finish or do whatever she needs. But if she's not smart enough to get her down and stands with Holly Holmes, you just never know. I mean, you just never know what could happen with that. So that's my pick. I got Kayla Harrison.
Okay.
Yeah, I like Kayla Harrison in this one also. Here's the thing, man. This fight is where this card to me starts to make me nervous because we've seen too many people missing weight, too many things falling apart. We're 6 days away. None of these fights have been canceled yet, right? No injuries, no nothing weird. I pray it's not too good to be true. And this fight to me,
please. That,
you know, Kayla Harrison fought at featherweight at 145 pounds. I believe she even fought at a women's lightweight division at one time, 155 pounds.
Yeah.
Kayla Harrison's huge. Well, I apologize. That's kind of fucked up to say, but you know what I mean? Listen, brother, how big is she? If you can say it, I can say it. Big. So Kayla Harrison, I just hope she makes weight. And I think if she makes weight, I think she has, I mean, all the tools to beat Holly Holm. She's making a UFC debut on the biggest UFC card in history. Is it too much for her? I don't think so. Both of them are a little older. I like Kayla. I'm going to go with the debut. Very rarely does the debut work out, you know?
Yeah.
But I'm going to go with the debut. It worked for MVP. Worked for Michael Venom Page against Kevin Holland.
I mean, but let's not forget she did lose to Larissa Pachenko in the PFL finals.
Yeah, well, Pachenko's I mean, she should be.
Should be in the UFC.
Yeah, they just don't have a division for her.
So. Yeah, but then again, this is just like Kayla Harrison. Like, it would be so much weight to cut for Pachenko. Like,
right?
You know, you'd almost have to bring Amanda Nunes back and
fight, bring Cyborg back. Something.
Cyborg, Cyborg. Not making women's MMA great again. What you need to do, UFC, is sign all of the best women and put them in the biggest division, and then let them eat, gain whatever weight they want to, and then let them throw hands at their most powerful.
Well, do you remember the point Nick brought up not that long ago?
Let them use steroids.
Let them all do drugs.
Yeah. I'm telling you, man. Yeah. It'd be good. I mean, let them get big.
No commission would ever sanction that, but I think, like, fuck them. You know what I mean? We'll do it. We'll do it. Do it on the early prelims. Do it on UFC Fight Pass. You know, try to, like, be chill about it. You know what I mean?
Please.
Make it like exhibition fights if you have to. Just pay them handsomely.
I mean, but we can also say this worst case scenario, she does miss weight, fight gets canceled. Then we just move Jalen Turner and Moicano up to the prelims.
Yeah.
And it starts the night off. So
yep.
Either way it goes, you just can't go wrong with it. But I don't want to see this fight get canceled. So
yeah.
Go ahead.
You're good. I got Kayla Harrison winning because Holly Holmes isn't doing what Holly Holmes has been known for. She's old. She's not finishing people. It's not going to happen. I don't think at all.
I agree.
Yeah. Fair enough. So now we got our next fight of the night, man. Men's featherweight, Calvin Kattar versus Aljamain Sterling, making his debut at featherweight against a guy who's also a killer. Funny story. We just had a great interview with a guy over at the New England Cartel who fights and has trained with Calvin Kattar. And he was kind of saying, like, he's riding with Kattar hard. He hopes he finishes Sterling. And I think we all are on kind of the same page here too. Maybe, I don't know how y'all feel, but this is a tough match for Aljo. You're stepping up with power, but the best thing about Aljo's, in my opinion, in his perspective, is the fact that he was never really a small guy for his previous division.
He was a weight bully at bantamweight anyway.
Correct. Yeah. So him coming up a weight class isn't going to really play too much of a factor, in my opinion, because he was already a big dude. He's massive for his size. So he should have came up a weight division a year ago. But now he gets his first fight at featherweight against Calvin Kattar. I like the matchup. I think it's a great first fight for Aljo, and I think it's a great stamp for Kattar to make his push into the top five if he wants to. What about you, fellas?
I like Kattar. Kattar has 91% takedown defense in the UFC.
Yep.
Which, against a guy like Aljo that's going to try to, you know, close distance and take you down, that might be the most important stat of the fight. If he can keep it on the ground, he's obviously has a significant height and reach advantage. Well, not too much of a reach advantage, but he's 5'11 to Aljo's 5'7. Hopefully he can piece Aljo up on the feet. Obviously, the last time Aljo fought, you know, he rushed in and caught a right hand and, you know, ended up on the mat with an early night in the second round. I like Kattar being able to do that to him. I'll never in my life root for Aljamain Sterling. he was a fraudulent bantamweight champion. He got the belt by disqualification like a fraud does. And then
we should have seen Piotr Jan's we should get to see that one day. And if this was back then, I mean, Piotr Jan at that time was a savage, dude. He was a savage in that division. And it's such bullshit that because he would have been the champ that night. Outside of that illegal knee.
Yeah, he was beating him. Beating him. Now, you know, obviously Aljo came back. They fought again. Aljo beat him by in a close decision.
Yep.
I don't care.
I agree, though. I think I'm going to go with Kattar as well. I'm going to go Kattar by finish.
Oof. I got Aljo actually doing it, man. I had this weird theory about him that, like, he didn't have a choice to be in this weight division. He was like, hey, we didn't want you to be champion for a while. You can fight again, but not in this division. O'Malley's been Dana White's guy from the jump. So I think he actually, you know, has been forced. You want to stay here with your boring ass? You got to stay in this division now. I think he wants to get a contract extension. I think, I mean, he wants to show out. So I'm going to have him taking this one.
It's fair.
He's an ex-champion.
Yeah.
But I mean, I had that weird theory, man. It's like, dude, he's, I don't think he wants to be there.
Well, part of that was he wouldn't fight Merab. So that played a big factor into him moving into the featherweight division. I don't know if he was so much forced, but he was.
Because
I mean, eventually, if you and your teammate are the top prospects in the featherweight division, you lose the title. You and Merab refuse to fight each other. I understand, but like obviously you can't be in the top three, top five of a division not wanting to fight the other top prospects in the division or top ranked fighters in the division. So somebody had to go somewhere. Aljo, you know, had his time at bantamweight. He had a good reign, but he got fucking flatlined. And you know,
you thought O'Malley was someone to fear moving forward, buddy. Yeah. You got a whole nother man sitting at top of the throne right now, ready to, you know, pretty much light the UFC on fire as far as the fan base goes. But I want to ask you this and tell me if you think this is wild to think about. Could you ever see a world where we see from top to bottom, like guys like Steve Urseg as a champ, Merab as a champ, and then Aljamain as a champ, all three in that lower division?
Man, what a time to be alive.
Yeah, I mean,
And then you got Dricus du Plessis as the champ. Like,
oh, he won't last long.
Could we see some of the weirdest champions again in 2024?
Yes.
I hope not, man.
I think so.
We could. We definitely could. I mean, I think Merab has a good chance, but I do like O'Malley in that matchup. Honestly, the more and more I think about it, I'm warming more and more up to O'Malley. Urseg against Pantoja, that's such a crazy fight that's even a thing and is happening. I love Pantoja, but like, dude, Urseg's got some power for a 125er, man, and he could light his shit up. Yeah. Yep. And then, you know, same thing at featherweight. Obviously, you know how I feel about the featherweight champion, and I think I don't think that changes anytime soon. So.
True that. So, and then to cap off the prelims, we have our featured prelim fight of the night. Yuri Prochazka coming off of a loss in a title shot against Alex Pejeda versus Alexander Rakic, who is coming off of a loss to
Jan Blachowicz.
So, again, two guys both coming off losses. Winner of this likely gets either number one contender fight or fights for the title, depending on how things shake up in that division. Boys, this is a big fight. One, it's a big fight for Yuri to make a statement and say that, you know, yeah, he lost to Pejeda, but he's still championship caliber. And then it's also a chance for Rochick to kind of, you know, defend the fact that maybe he may have lost to Jan Blachowicz, but he still can be a contender in that division. So, I don't want to spend too much time on this because, to be frank, and this is me personal, I don't know much about Rochick like that. Oh. I haven't really watched much of his fights in his career like I have Yuri's. So I do think Yuri gets it done, and I think Yuri gets his name right back into the mix to get there and fight for a title again. But I don't know how you guys feel, if you guys want to add anything to that.
Yeah, man, I got Serbia power, dog.
Yeah.
I got Yuri losing.
You got Yuri losing?
Yeah, man. I didn't know much about Alexander at all. And I look at his record, dude. He's a fucking beast.
Yeah, he's a savage.
I think Yuri's a little overrated, and I think I might see that.
You think Yuri's overrated?
Yep. I've thought it for a while now. I thought him beating Grover Teixeira was not impressive. That man was old as fuck.
I kind of agree with that. Yeah.
Yeah,
he was also losing
a lot, too. Yeah, he was losing. I don't know, man. I've always thought like that wild play is good. That was good when you were fighting in Rizin over there in Japan and stuff like that. But as the UFC, I mean, he's had some crazy knockouts coming in. I don't know. I haven't been as impressed as I should be with him. So I got him taking this dub and losing, boy.
Fair enough. But let's be honest here. Regardless of if he wins or loses this fight, his stare down in the octagon between him and Alex Bejeda is like, that's like top three greatest stare downs of all time outside of your.
It was, dude.
Like especially when they grabbed each other's shoulders.
Yep, and looked each other dead in the eye like that. That's an ice cold stare, man. And Fury is just one of those guys. That's why I like him, because he, you know, he may not be like you said. He may fight wild and shit like that. But like, there's no doubt about it. When you step inside a cage with another man, and you look across from them, and they don't even blink, and they're locked in and staring you straight in the face. Like, there is an intimidation factor that plays a big part of fighting another man like that, who looks intimidating, and it will literally like is ready to die inside of the octagon. So like,
Now you're making me go back on my word, because I just looked up a random stat for him. He has 25 knockouts.
Yeah, I mean, Yuri does it. You know, he's been there.
For me personally, I like Yuri in this. I think this is the kind of a bounce back fight for Yuri. Because I do think he is, you know, he belongs in the top three conversation in the light heavyweight division. That is shown to be a pretty shallow division, for that matter. Alexander Rochick hasn't really fought anyone. He fought Jan and lost. Jan was like the first kind of big name he fought, and he lost. You know, I don't know how you go from a loss to Jan to jumping to fight Yuri. I feel like that's crazy. But that kind of shows me how shallow the light heavyweight division is right now.
It should be Yuri versus Ankalaev.
Yeah, right. That's a whole different thing.
I feel like they're holding out Ankalaev to fight the winner of Jamal Hill Pejeda.
Well, I don't know what the deal is with a lot of those fighters. You know, for some reason, it seems like a lot of these fighters don't, you know, like, obviously, okay, so you have Ramadan starts, you know, it started March 10th and goes till April 9th. So those guys are fasting right now.
Yep.
So they're not in, you know, they're probably in a very limited training camp. So there's a reason why none of them are on UFC 300. Why you don't get Islam on 300, why you don't get Muhammad Ankalaev on 300, why, you know, I'm not going to disrespect that. I respect that. But at the same time, like it allows, you know, guys like Rochick to get a shot that, in my opinion, don't really deserve it.
Sure. Like, why couldn't Jan fight, you know?
Yeah. It's, you know, and, you know, it just is what it is. I mean, this is the matchup we got. But because of this being the matchup that we got, I agree with Nick in the sense that, you know, yeah, I mean, you know, Yuri is good for a light heavyweight division in the UFC that isn't great. So it's kind of like, you know, yeah, he beat Glover for the belt, but like Glover was 42 years old.
Which is crazy to think that back in the day, this was the division.
Yeah, it changes all the time, right? I mean, it happens quick. It changes all the time. You have guys move on, guys move weight divisions, new champions, new prospects rise, and it'll flip at some point, and light heavyweight will be, you know, dominant again, but it's just extremely shallow right now. But I do think this is a bounce back for Yuri. Yuri has just fought way, way, way better competition than Rochick has. You know, like I said, Rochick's coming off a loss to Jan Blachowicz, and you know, he hadn't fought anybody like Yuri. I think Yuri wins by KO.
Sick. So good take.
So that wraps up the prelims. Again, if you're tuning into this episode, we are about to get on to the main card. So make sure you are watching, subscribing, liking the video so you can keep along and watch along. So if you're watching this one, this was the prelim video. Make sure you tune into the next video for the main card, where we're going to break it down in detail, just like we've done the rest of them. We appreciate you guys tuning in, and we'll catch you guys for the main card next.
Ciao, ciao.